This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 266. On our way to 300. I was figuring up the other day that when we have 6 years worth of podcasts, it will be episode 312. So that's going to be a little bit to get to, and even episode 300 is going to be a little bit to get to, but we should be around episode 300, sometime just before Christmas. If we keep doing these, I think I'm going to quit. You know, I don't know when to quit. That's my problem. So I will, as long as there's stuff to talk about, I'll keep doing these. And, you know, I just can keep gabbing forever. Because I like the sound of my own voice. Anyways, I just had a little happy thing happen. Happy! Yay! A couple of days ago, I went to my drawer in my vanity, like I am oft to do in the mornings when I am going into my major client, and I opened my drawer and I looked down and I didn't have my little badge that I'm supposed to wear. And I thought, that's odd, because I normally come home and that's the first thing I do is I take off my little badge and I put it in that drawer so I know where to find it. But I didn't have it. I looked and looked and asked Jesus to help me find it, and there was crickets. And I've learned over time that when there's crickets, that I just don't hear anything back after I ask about that, that I should just leave it alone. So today, I finally got around to calling the security office to say I have lost my badge. And before I did that, I went and on our website and I looked up the frequently asked questions about badges so that I would be speaking intelligently as opposed to just calling them up and saying, help me, help me. Because maybe because I work with user communities, I like it a whole lot better myself when the user has obviously done a little research and now they're calling me because the standard stuff has not worked. So I found out that they say, well, give it 2 weeks, look around. If it shows up, then no big deal. In the meantime, you can come down here and get a temporary pass and we'll. So I wandered over there today and I picked up my temporary pass. And they said, yeah, just keep an eye out for it for 2 weeks and see. And I thought, okay, well, there's not much chance I'm going to find it because I already looked. I didn't say that, but that's what I was thinking. So I got out my car and I was setting up to do this podcast and I was chewing a piece of gum and I thought, oh, I gotta have something to put my gum in. And the thought came to me, well, there might be something down in the center console. And so I looked down there and then I looked over and I saw my badge. It had fallen down between my seat and my center console. And so I had a little rejoicing. Yay, I found my badge. That which was lost has been found, and there was great rejoicing in the land. So, yay! I don't like losing things. So that was good. That was good. That was a little happy time. In other news, I'm still not finished with the rough draft for Windfall 1. I think I'm somewhere around 311 pages at this point. 310, 311 pages. And it's still going on. And in fact, I'm trying to land it at the end of... Well, I'm trying to land the main story at the end of this chapter. Then I have another chapter that I need to do that is kind of looking out at the broader picture. And then I have an epilogue that I have to do. So I probably have... there's a motorcycle thingy behind me, and I'm trying to decide if he's actually a policeman, or are you a policeman? No, he's not. Not, it's just his lights flash. Well, great. So, couldn't tell what was going on there. Now I've probably made the driver who was behind me really mad because I pulled over kind of in front of him. And then I realized that's not a policeman. And anyways, life is hard sometimes. But anyway, so, still not done yet. And I probably got another 10 pages, 15 pages left to go. Well, maybe 20 pages left to go. So it's probably going to come around somewhere around 320, 325, 330, somewhere in there. And I'm up to 93,000 words-ish, somewhere in there, 93,000. And then, of course, it's like, oh, you're so close to 100,000 words. Maybe you should just make it 100,000 words. It's going to be close to 100,000 words by the time I'm all done, because there's about 350 words per page. And if I've got another 20 pages to do, that's another 7,000 words. So, yeah, it's going to be really close to 100,000, which means that every book from here on out is going to have to be about 100,000 words. But, you know, that's okay. It's all right. Wow, this is very interesting. You know, I haven't seen many of these three-wheel motorcycles, the trikes that have the two wheels on the front. Haven't seen much of them recently. I just had one sitting beside me. That was the one making the noise. I saw another one go past one direction, and then I saw another one go past the other direction. It must be a convention in town. I don't know what it is. Anyway, so I'm trying to, you know, get those last few little things landed and get this finished up. So I don't know that I'm going to get it finished this week, but hopefully next week I'll get it finished, because then I need to turn around and do a couple of good hard editing passes on it. And then I got to get the cover done. So, because I am running out of time to have this out for a beta release in July. And it's, if I'm theoretically going to get two of these done a year, you know, I need to get going. What that means is that if it's 100,000 words, as opposed to what I was counting on initially, which was 70,000 words, I was counting on doing 70,000 words at 5,000 words a week, which meant that was 14 weeks. To get 14 weeks done with 100,000 words, I'm going to have to write 7,000 words a week. That's pushing it. But it'll be fine. It'll be fine. You know, it'll be fine. Especially if I can get the cover done. If I can get the cover done, then I will be happy. If I don't get the cover done, well, it'll take a little longer, but I'll still be happy. So that's all going fine. Trying to think. Had some nice conversations with friends this week. So that's good. I went out for the first time hunting morel mushrooms with a buddy. I'd never been out before, and we usually walk every couple of weeks, and he said, well, do you just want to go out and hunt morels? Sure, we can do that. So we went out on our back 40 and found some morels. And there's probably more out there. And I don't know how long the season for morels actually lasts. And he said they were selling like for $80 a pound at the local market. So, you know, I don't know how many morels it takes to get to a pound, but if you really knew where there was a bunch of them and you had the time to go out and look, that might be a worthwhile little adventure. So who knows? When things slow down a little bit in the future, maybe I'll become a mushroom hunter. And they say if you get a mesh bag that you collect them in. So as you're walking along, you're kind of sprinkling the spores down. Then you can kind of keep going back over the same places year after year, and they'll keep populating there, so it'll be easier for you to find. I was actually talking to a friend on Monday about it. After this, I went out over the weekend for a little bit. And he said, yeah, he said, around these parts, he said, talking about morels, he said, that's the secret stuff. He said, you know, you just don't hardly talk about where you go to hunt morels. And another buddy who was with me, he said, so it's kind of like your fishing hole. And the guy said, it's a lot more than just the fishing hole. He said, people don't talk about where they look for morels because they're a cash crop, apparently. Anyways, so interesting stuff from the week. This week, well, actually, a couple of weeks ago, I came across an article on a new book by Arianna Huffington. You may recognize the name from the Huffington Post. She had written a new book called Thrive. And yeah, it had some good stuff in the article. And so I thought, I will talk about that. She is the chair, the president, and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post Media Group. She's a nationally syndicated columnist and the author of 14 books, so she's quite a prolific writer. In May of 2005, she launched the Huffington Post, and it quickly became one of the hot sites on the internet. They said in the article, the most widely read, linked to, and frequently cited media brands on the internet, which is saying something. In 2012, she won a Pulitzer Prize for national reporting. She has been named to the Forbes Most Powerful Women list and the Time 100, Time Magazine's list of the 100 most influential people. Woo-hoo. Originally from Greece, she moved to England when she was 16 years old. She graduated from Cambridge University with an MA in economics at 21. She became the president of the famed debating society, the Cambridge Union. So, okay. So this woman has accomplished a few things in her life. This is her 14th book. It's called Thrive, the Third Metric to Redefining Success and Creating a Life of Well-Being, Wisdom, and Wonder. So after it was on sale for less than a week, it debuted at number one on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller. She, in other words, she's doing much better than me as an author. And so they were talking to her about some of the things that she mentions in the book. And one of them was to explain the title. What do you mean by the third metric? And what she said, I thought, was very good. She said, over time, our society's, this notion of success that we have has been reduced to money and power. And she said, in fact, at this point, success, money, and power are practically synonymous in everybody's line. So obviously, if you have money and power, then you must be successful and life must be great. Except if people would pay attention, they would realize that's not true. And she aptly compares it to a two-legged stool. If all you have is money and power, it's a two-legged stool. And you can balance on it for a while, but eventually you're going to topple over. And she said this third metric of success that goes on beyond that, that helps you not topple over, she feels like has four basic things: well-being, wisdom, wonder, and giving. She said this, what made her kind of rethink what she was doing was that in 2007, she was lying on the floor of her home office in a pool of blood. Now, that will make you rethink things. She had just collapsed from exhaustion, and she had slammed her head into the corner of her desk, and it had broken her cheekbone. And she said she had collapsed from exhaustion, from lack of sleep, but she went to all these doctors because she was convinced it had to be something else. You know, it just can't be lack of sleep. Had to be something else. So she, she finally was convinced that, in fact, it wasn't anything else. It was just exhaustion. Then she started pursuing other things to help her balance her life. And one of the things that she pursued was meditation. And we've talked about meditation before. And I've talked about how I think it's a great thing. And the guy who's interviewing her actually quotes from the book, saying that, let's see. Oh, no. He's quoting from another book, and I thought this was a great quote, that Dan Harris's 10% Happier, he documents how he used the science of meditation to tame his inner voice. Tame his inner voice. That's a direct quote. He tamed his inner voice, and it helped him overcome substance abuse problems. And they go on to mention all these famous people who have meditated over time. And what's interesting to me is I personally feel like that this business of meditation, the reason that meditation works is because of my basic premise that God is talking to everyone all the time. And the only reason we don't hear him, is because our flesh is making such noise that it drowns him out. And so whatever you can do to quiet yourself, to make yourself more aware of the present and the local, to bring yourself into the moment, if you do that, I feel like whether or not you hear God's voice directly, or whether you don't just feel that soft urging underneath all that noise, I think God uses that as an opportunity to just impress on people that everything's okay, you're all right, you're moving forward, everything's going to work out. And I think it's that reconnection with God's voice in the process of quieting yourself, of taming your inner voice, to use the terminology that the author of 10% Happier used. It is that process of taming that inner voice, that actually helps people, whether they know Jesus or not, because Jesus loves people. And he's talking to everybody. Yes, he wants them to be in a full relationship with him and to truly know him. But he will take whatever people will give him. And if all they're going to give him is just a few moments of meditation each day, he's going to move into that and make that beneficial. Because if it becomes beneficial, maybe they'll do it more. And if in the process of doing it more, they become more and more in touch with him, then he can lead them and guide them, and then they will actually know him better, because he will arrange for them to know them better. So anyways, apparently meditation is a big thing. She did talk about the fact that meditation is in because it works. She said, what study after study shows is that meditation profoundly affects every aspect of our lives, our body, our minds, our physical health, and our emotional and spiritual well-being. So when you consider all the benefits of meditation, and more are being found every day, it's not an exaggeration to call meditation a miracle drug. She thinks that 2013 was really the year where meditation stopped being seen as something as flaky or new agey, but it entered the mainstream. And she said we had CEOs coming out and saying that they meditated, and yada, yada, yada. So she thinks meditation is a big thing, and I don't disagree. Meditation is a good thing. You know, centering yourself. It's even better when you're focusing on God, and, you know, giving God a chance to speak to you. Those are all really good things. She had another interesting thing in here. with the phrase "solvitur ambulado," which means it is solved by walking. And I thought this was kind of an interesting thing, that there are people that are actually convinced that what you need to do is, if you got a problem and you need to have a meeting with somebody, yada yada, that what you do is you just say, let's go walk around the block and talk about it. Which, that seems like, you know, that's a pretty good idea to me. I like that idea. I'd like to have more walking meetings, but that's not exactly how we work up at my major client. So, you know, I'm getting my mail, by the way. So I liked that idea. She did have some interesting facts. She said that the University of Illinois researchers showed in a study that walking three times a week for 40 minutes at one's natural pace helps combat the effects of aging and increases brain connectivity and cognitive performance. She quoted Henry David Thoreau as saying, "Methinks that the moment my legs begin to move, my thoughts begin to flow." That's pretty good. I like that idea. And I've experienced that. Sometimes when you got a little gnarly problem, you go out, walk for a little bit, and it's like, hey. Anyways, so she also talked, she had an interesting phrase called "going viral has gone viral." And I thought this was an interesting reflection on our society. I'm backing into my garage, where she was talking about the fact that always being out there to see what the latest, coolest thing was and being on the edge of that, and that people have gotten so obsessed with that, that they're always flitting from one thing to another. And really, in my terminology, they are, maybe she says that. We love to be distracted. She did say this, you know, because I've noticed that people are just going from one distraction to another, to another, to another, to another. And they're not really giving themselves a chance to settle and be, as we talked about last week, present and local. And she said, that's fine. anyways, she said, unfortunately, the ever-increasing creep of technology into our lives, our families, our bedrooms, and our brain makes it much harder to renew ourselves and connect with our sense of wonder. And that is one thing. When you get outside and you walk around, not only do you get creative, but, you know, you start looking at nature, and it's just so cool to be outside. This is one of the reasons I just love having some land nearby that I can go out and walk on, because, man, it is good stuff. She did note that now we've reached the point in technology where we're actually having apps that help us not be so distracted, because they, you know, can, you can put in a timer and it will limit and won't get you, keep you connected. And the other piece that she talks about in this third metric is giving. She said, we forget that every day we are surrounded by opportunities to act on that same instinct for giving. These chances are always underfoot. As the 19th century naturalist John Burroughs put it, the great opportunity is where you are. Do not despise your own place and hour. Every place is under the stars. Every place is the center of the world. And that's really true. You know, I don't know if I mentioned in the last podcast that I think I mentioned about the lady that I didn't pick up. But I had another situation that I really need to think about these things. Because I was driving to work. I was a little late. I was driving to work. And I came up to a stop sign. And the guy across the way had his, you know, he had his hood up on his car. And he had the battery cables attached. And he was obviously waiting for somebody to come by and give him a jump. My wife is coming home. So I'm going to finish this up. And I looked at him for a minute, and I knew that's what he was wanting. And I could have driven over there and I could have actually given him a jump. And I didn't do it. And I was like, oh, you know, after I drove fast. Oh, think about that. Do a better job. So I'm going to try to do a better job about that. Because that's giving. Anyways, this is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. And so has my beloved.